Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are looking at Australian e-commerce and heading into 2026, the sources are making one thing very clear.
That the getting started phase is, well, it's over.
It's completely over. We are now deep in the acceleration phase. It's not about if you should use AI anymore. It's really about how fast you can.
Right. It's about velocity.
Right.
And the market has, you know, it's really split in two.
The numbers really show that. We're looking at a $65.5 billion market. But the scary part is this performance gap. We're seeing a 30 to 40% higher conversion rate for retailers using AI systems versus the, let's call them, traditionalists.
And that's a lead you just can't make up if you're on the wrong side of it. I mean, you look at companies like The Iconic or Chemist Warehouse. They're not just automating old tasks.
Right.
They're changing the entire logic of how a customer interacts with them.
Exactly. Let's take that Shopo case study. I mean, we all get basic segmentation, right?
Yeah.
Show coats when it's cold. But what they did was, it was so much more granular.
They went way beyond just product affinity. They started solving for context, for timing.
What does that actually mean?
Well, their AI figured out that activewear isn't just one category. If you're browsing for it on a weekday morning, your intent is probably functional. You need, you know, accessories, a gym bag.
Hair ties, that sort of thing.
Exactly. But that same person on a Friday night might be looking for more of an athleisure vibe for going out. Two totally different needs.
And just figuring that out drove a 23% jump in their average order value. It's a huge shift from people who bought this also bought that to
people doing this right now need that. It's all about the immediate context.
Which is kind of the same thinking behind Kathmandu's use of visual search, isn't it? Removing friction.
It is. And the stat there, the 3x conversion rate, is obviously amazing. But I think the why is what's really interesting.
It solves the vocabulary gap, right?
That's it, exactly. You might not know the term for, say, a specific type of waterproof fabric or the name for a certain style of jacket, but you know what it looks like.
So you just upload a picture and the AI bridges that gap between your idea and the store's actual product data.
Yeah, it takes your inability to describe something out of the equation.
Okay, so that's all great for the front end, but it's kind of useless if the back end is slow and clunky. The Broza furniture example was really telling.
Right, this is where you get the massive operational wins. Most old systems just look at past sales. Broza's system started pulling in, you know, external data.
Like what?
Weather patterns in Melbourne, what local events were on, seasonal cycles, things like that.
So they're not just reacting to a sales spike for sofas. They're predicting the rainy weekend that's going to cause people to stay inside and browse for sofas.
And that let them cut warehouse costs by 18%. They just stopped wasting money storing stuff that wasn't going to sell.
That efficiency idea seems to be a theme. The notes mentioned a Sydney homewares retailer. Something like 70% of support queries are now handled autonomously.
It's a huge number. But the really interesting metric isn't the speed, it's the 45% cut in their service costs.
Well, it changes the job, doesn't it? Your human agents aren't just answering, "Where's my order?"
Yeah.
100 times a day?
Precisely. The AI does that. The humans get to focus on the really complex, nuanced problems. It's the same logic with that fraud detection example.
The 67% reduction in fraud.
Yeah, but that wasn't even the biggest win. The biggest win was that it stopped blocking legitimate orders, which the old rule-based systems did all the time. It was unblocking revenue.
Okay, so looking forward to the rest of 2026, this idea of the morphing interface seems like the natural endpoint for all this?
It is, and this is where it gets a little bit complicated. We're not just talking about showing different products to different people anymore.
We're talking about the entire structure of the website changing in real time.
Correct. So you might log in and see a very visual, video-heavy site because the system knows you're a browser. I might log in and get dense tables full of technical specs because I like to compare details.
The navigation changes, the layout, even as the notes say, the sustainability info, like displaying a product's carbon footprint. It all adapts.
It adapts to your specific cognitive style.
But that brings up a really difficult question, doesn't it? If the store experience is completely different for every single person,
then does the brand as a shared concept even exist anymore?
Exactly. A brand is supposed to be this consistent thing we all experience together. If my store looks totally different from your store, that shared reality is gone.
And that's the big trade-off. For now, the advice is pretty practical. Don't try and build that morphing store today.
Just pick one thing.
Yeah, pick your biggest point of friction, like the search issue or inventory, and solve that one thing perfectly. And of course, the clean data rule is still king.
Right. You can't run any of this on messy, unreliable data.
Garbage in, garbage out. Yep. It's still the law of the land.
It does leave us with a pretty provocative thought, though. As we get closer and closer to perfect one-to-one personalization, at what point does a brand's identity just dissolve into nothing?
That is the million-dollar question for the next decade, for sure.
Something to think about. Thanks for diving in with us.